Welcome to this episode of Shoulder to Shoulder, where we strive to grow in love of the Lord and each other. I am Pam Marvin.
And I'm Megan Silas.
And we are here again, back in the studio. It's always so good to be in the studio with you, Megan. I really, really love these times with you.
Yeah, we have fun.
Yeah, and we're continuing our series on Corinthians. Love is patient. Love is kind.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to stop you right there because it's funny. I've noticed that in the last two episodes, so this is the third episode in this series, every time you say that, your voice gets like really soft and quiet. Love is
But they're
patient.
So beautiful.
Love is kind.
It evokes that in me. It evokes a tone of voice change.
It's funny how quickly it just takes you over.
It does. I mean, gosh, it's scripture, honey, come on.
It is true. Yeah. Well,
but now we're going to be doing something that's a little more challenging part of it. You know, specifically, we're going to be tackling, and these are the two that you mentioned in one of our previous episodes that we're going to kind of tie in together.
Right.
The exact sequence.
Right. It's not the exact sequence, but we thought they kind of went together.
Right. So what we're going to be tackling today is love is not jealous or envious and does not seek its own interest.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Megan, I want to kind of back up a second and just talk to our friends, our listeners about why we wanted to do this piece on love and what love is. Cause I think for me, it's, there's so much of what love isn't in the world today, what people call love.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the other part of it is, as you alluded to just a second ago, it brings me so much peace of heart to discuss what love is.
Right. Yeah. One of the things that I think when we first kind of came up with this idea of really parsing out this particular passage is because I feel that it's so well known, right? It's one of, I would say, one of the most famous passages in the Bible. And it's so commonly read at weddings, you know, and just, but the thing about it is that sometimes our familiarity with something can make it so that we don't really listen to it. We don't really let it permeate us. It's like, oh yeah, yeah, I know that. I know that passage. Oh, it's very pretty. It's beautiful. But what does it really mean to like live that out, to really strive to do the virtuous things that he calls love and then also avoid the sinful things that right. will poison love? And often I think we can idealize what love can be, but then wonder, why are we struggling in relationships? Why are we struggling to feel like love is blessing us, or, you know, like, oh, this is so hard. Why does this have to be so hard? But part of the reason for that tends to be because we're not recognizing that even in our relationships that are love, that their love exists, that maybe we're not loving in a well-ordered way,
right.
mm-hmm. that we're doing things in those relationships that are compromising our ability to receive love, our ability to give love. Like, so to really say, okay, we have this beautiful model description of what good and holy love looks like. Let's take a deeper look at it.
Right. And I'm glad we're doing it. I mean, It warms my heart. So I'm praying and hoping that we'll warm our listeners' heart too and have them striving ever more for living out these virtues, really. And I heard one time, Megan, I thought it was beautiful. You could actually replace the word love in this passage from Corinthians with Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a description of who he is.
That's true. Yeah.
And that's just so beautiful.
Absolutely. And that is a good way to combat some misunderstandings about who Christ is. And the reality is that as that is who Christ is, it is also who the church should be.
Mm-hmm.
It is who every Christian should be as we strive to imitate our Lord and Savior, as we strive to be other Christs in the world. And so I hope that this series does warm hearts, but I also hope it challenges hearts.
You know, I kind of want to get back to just saying hello to you and go back to the greeting, because you started, when you said warm, I thought, oh my gosh, your house is really warm right now.
Oh, yep, that's true. I'm a little bit in exile right now. So thanks be to God, my country house, which has, you know, was recently renovated with all brand new air conditioners and things like that, is up and running fine. But I came back to my house in Cyprus to find that the air conditioners, as I would say, had given up the ghost. And at the time that we're recording this, we are in a not atypical, but significant heat wave here in Texas. I mean, it's always hot in summer in Texas. I mean, it's actually almost amazing to me how every summer people talk about this like it's a new thing, but it's, you know, it's always hot here, but we're in like triple digits and it's really hot. And so, yeah.
99 to be exact as we speak.
At the moment.
At
okay.
the moment.
And yep. it's not yet 5, which is usually the hottest time.
No, it says by 4 o'clock, 100, by 5 o'clock, 101.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, so I'm kind of trying to deal with that reality that I have to have both air conditioning units replaced. They simultaneously died. So how can we make this relevant to the conversation that we're talking about? And I do think there is actually a relevance
yeah.
because if you're in Texas and you know that it's super hot, the air conditioners never go out when it's 85. They always go out when it's 100. Mm. Or, you know, like they, when it's really a challenge, when things get hot, when things get like where it really has to work hard, that's when things start to break down. And I think that's relevant to love.
Yes.
And kind of the things that we're going to be talking about today, because the last two episodes were about patience and kindness. Mm-hmm. Super beautiful, loving, lovely things that, you know, it's just clear those are good things, right? Those are things yeah. that we want to strive to be.
But now we're going to talk about it. It's not.
But when things like jealousy, envy, and insisting on your own way enter in.
Your own interest.
Your own interest, the two ways to say things.
Self-seeking.
Yeah. When those things enter into the relationship, it's going to be a lot harder work to maintain that relationship. And often things are going to start to break down. Just like my AC when it's 100 degrees out.
Mm.
Now, fortunately, I can just pay some money and make it all better. But in relationship, that's not, it's not that easy.
Okay. With timely topic related to this subject, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Would you say, or do you think there is some amount of jealousy or envy in the trans movement?
Wow. Okay. that's a big thing. Let me first, before I tackle that, talk about the difference between jealousy and envy, because it's important to make a distinction about those.
Mm-hmm.
And of the two, envy is the worst.
You're right.
Because envy is actually one of the deadly sins. So envy is defined by not only begrudging a good of another in the sense, because you simply just want it yourself. So you desire, you're coveting somebody else's good, a good that they have. So you want it for yourself. So you actually begrudge it that they have it. So not only do you want it for yourself, you don't want them to have
exactly.
it. Right. So jealousy can just simply be, well, I'm all right with them having it, but I really want it for myself. But envy says, if I can't have it, then nobody else should have it either.
Well, here's, I have a quick little definition
okay,
for
go.
You. According to Catholic definition, jealousy is when you guard something you have and are afraid it will be taken away, whereas envy is when you strongly desire something that somebody else has.
Okay. Well, that's interesting because I mean, that's another way to look at jealousy. I mean, mm-hmm. I think you certainly could see both of those ways of your like, you're sort of stingy with something. So, but I think it can also just be like this outward looking thing where you kind of want something that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So, because that's often used, I think, in the parlance of today, jealousy is more ordered towards longing for something you don't have than mm-hmm. it is being greedy about what you do have.
That's true.
But, I mean, both of them are certainly valuable and relevant to understand. But when you go into that place of envy where you're really like not your own desires then cause you to desire not the good of the other, but actually their deprivation. And that's a real significant issue.
Yeah, but I'm still so, and I want to just to put a caveat here that I have a very tremendous and compassionate heart for people who experience gender dysphoria and feel like they were born in the wrong bodies. I really do have a big compassionate heart for them. I pray that they will find peace in the Lord. That being said, is it a jealousy? Is it like I want that? I want to be that?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just, oh, this is who I am? Or both?
I think it's better to put the words, this is how I feel, in there than this is who I am, because that's more true. Now, they may be experiencing it as this is who I am because they've equated how they feel with who they are. That's dangerous territory. But we can certainly say that there is a discontent with what is and a significant desire to grasp for something that is not theirs and truthfully can never be theirs.
Right. So it is an envy, a type of envy.
Yeah. And the sad reality is that in this situation, they don't, in their envy, they actually steal from themselves.
How so? Explain that.
They lose their own identity that was given to them and relinquish it for a false identity that they will never truly possess. And it's bad enough to try to steal something from someone else. It's quite another thing to deprive yourself of the greatest good beyond God himself, which is your own God-given identity. Mm. And in that place, as you started the discussion with your understanding of your own compassion, that deserves a lot of compassion, to be in a place where you have so been convinced of a lie,
mm-hmm,
that who you were made to be isn't enough, that there isn't goodness in you just as you are in the body that you've been given, and that there's not a plan for you in that. That is a big loss, and it's a really difficult place to function. And so it's very easy to, you know, especially if you have no personal experience with somebody who suffers from this, or no, you don't suffer from it yourself. And I do use the word suffer intentionally. I think that would even be taken negatively by, you know, the culture that promotes this ideology of transgenderism. For me to say you suffer from transgenderism, absolutely. But those folks might agree with me by saying, oh yeah, we suffer because of the persecution and the bigotry and everything. I'm like, no, you're suffering from a disassociation from your true identity. And that will always be a painful place to be.
Always.
And the answer is not accommodating the lie. It's proclaiming even more beautifully and more powerfully and with as much conviction as possible, the truth of their goodness.
Mm-hmm.
As created by God. But it's not a show about transgenderism. It's a show about envy and jealousy and insisting on our own way. But it is an example that is very much in the news and on the forefront of, you know, the culture, about insisting on your own way.
Yeah.
And wanting it to be the way you want it to be, regardless the cost.
Yeah. And again, I like that we're having this conversation about the difference between jealousy and envy, but we want to make sure that we're also talking about it does not seek its own interest, which actually supports those two, like right, we said. But envy is a deadly sin.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the seven deadly sins. Why is that? is characterized by an insatiable desire like greed and lust. That doesn't make sense to me. This is the definition I'm reading. I don't like it.
Well, okay. I think the important word there is insatiable. To define the word insatiable means will not be satisfied. It's never satisfied. That's why it's deadly. The only sins that are deadly are the ones that aren't repented from. And so when you have an insatiable desire for something, when it's never enough.
That's right.
Then you'll never come to a place of true repentance. And therefore you will die in a state of sin. That's the only one that goes unforgiven.
Here's an interesting analogy that I just came across that, you know, that envy is like a venom that comes from the familiar feeling and it's poisonous of jealousy and poisonous words. I deserve, I should, I'm entitled. This is the reason that envy is deadly. Its toxin works on our soul like a boa constrictor, wrenching it imperceptibly tighter with every breath until we can barely breathe at all. That's why it's deadly. It suffocates us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a little, like, this is stupid, but they used a mixed metaphor there.
They did. I caught that too.
And it bothered me. So I just
the had toxin and the suffocation.
I know I'm not the only one who thought that, because I was like, okay, are you going to go with a rattlesnake or are you going to go with a boa constrictor? Because a rattlesnake's got a toxin that boa constrictor doesn't. But
I caught
just
that
put
too.
That out there I because did. I'm sure that there are other people who thought it too. And so you're not alone. Okay. But, you know, it's an important thing to point out that it's something that builds on itself.
So no, I like envy as being a toxic, mm-hmm. better, because it eats you up.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know what it kind of reminds me of like, have you ever, you know, read one of those murder mystery novels or something where like, it's usually a spouse who's slowly poisoning their loved one over time by giving them like small doses of rat poison or mm-hmm. cyanide or something. And then it just starts to build up in the system. And eventually like they don't have to keep giving more. It's just that like each single application builds on itself, and then you get to the point where you get to a deadly dose, but it happens so slowly over time that it's almost imperceptible. That is what something like this is. Like the more you when you envy like things in a little small way, and then, you know, maybe like it starts like this, you know, maybe you just, you know, see somebody else has got, say, some piece of clothing that you like, and you know, you're not going to like steal it off their back or anything in that sort of envy, but you might just do something like, oh, she doesn't look very good in that shirt. Right? So it's like you want the shirt, but because you can't have it, maybe you can't afford it or whatever. So you're going to take something a little away from her by, you know, by giving that negativity. But the more you do that, the more it builds, you know, to the point where you may be committing significant sin. Because you've just kind of gotten yourself used to it and it builds and builds and builds on itself. But I think the most essential part of all of that is who's in the center of it all. I, me, me, me. It's selfishness.
Absolutely. Opposite of love. That's self-centered, self-serving. And this is what it is not.
And it's
but
also
love is not.
It's also pleasure seeking. You know, we don't tend to be jealous or envious of things that are hard. It's like, wow, look at that amazing trial that God allowed in that person's life. Boy, I sure wish I had that. You know, no, it's more like, oh, wow, look at all the esteem that they get from that position they're holding, or look at all the money that they're making from that job, or look at that amazing car, their hot wife, or, you know, any of these things that you think are going to bring positive feelings to you, esteem, power, luxury. You know, it's all these things that are temporal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's not forget the phrase about it does not seek its own interest. Because to me, that's where it starts, is self-interest and selfishness that festers, like the toxin becomes mm-hmm. more the poison of first maybe jealousy and then envy. Because mm-hmm. It's just toxic. I like that imagery of it. Yeah. And it is about self-seeking again, that, you know, that sin of Satan, that pride that just is completely, utterly self-absorbed. Mm-hmm. It's just a poison, and we need to be watching out for it everywhere. I don't know about you, Megan, but during my Christian journey, one of the things that the Lord does is, you know, he only really reveals our sin to us a little at a time because he is a gentleman, right?
We cannot take
it all at once, right? And I remember as a young woman starting to grow in the faith and thinking, I'm a good person. I'm not selfish. I really thought when I was in my 20s that I was not a selfish person. And the Lord's been showing me for the last 30 years how selfish I am.
Right.
So I think that's interesting that this is part of the way he describes what love is to us, that it is not selfish. It's not self-seeking. It is not all about you. How many times have we heard that one?
Right.
It's not all about you.
And yet, I don't think we can really discuss this topic without mentioning the verse in the Bible that, well, I think it says in more than one place, but where it says, the Lord is a jealous God. Oh. So how do we, you know, jive those two things? Because, you know, we know that God is love, and yet it says he's jealous. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I was going to look up the scripture itself and see. He is no other God. He is a jealous God. I think that's probably just a real poor translation, honestly.
Well, I don't know about that. Because, okay. So, the reality is that as human beings, in our nature, there's really nothing of this world that we created ourselves or that is really our due. Mm. You see, we are dependent creatures who live and move and have our being in the Lord. So in our absolute dependency and lack of any novel creativity, there's nothing that's really ours by right. But God, on the other hand, is the only one who has the right to be jealous because he does deserve our whole heart and our whole mind and our whole strength.
That's a good way to look
as our creator and the one who sustains us.
Mm.
So a lot of this stuff, this idea of jealousy, envy, insisting on one's own way, comes from a spirit of, I want to get what I deserve, what is due me, because I want it. But the reality is that there's really nothing that's due you.
You know, this makes me feel like it's time to take the temperature.
Okay.
Because I'm feeling the stirrings. The stirrings.
All right,
with all of
temperature
that.
Check.
You know, it is like eating itself, like the jealousy, the I want, that selfishness, just kind of like it almost decays from the inside out. That self-interest, I mean, that's just a self-implosion, really. So it's giving me this really ick feeling. I'm like, oof.
Is there anything personally that makes it
relevant? The selfishness part? About being selfish? About
like
what
your own selfishness? Or selfishness that you experienced? Or like what?
Oh, my personal selfishness is, you know, just the iniquities of housekeeping. You know, that's probably the biggest one, you know, that self-pity. Oh, I've got to do so much. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
But that's not quite as awful as what you know, I think we're trying to get across about how it can be with us being too self-interested. You know, like we're trying to say that's not what love is. That is not what love is.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel it just can like bubble up in you and just be a toxic ick if you go with it.
Yeah.
You've got to be selfless. What does that mean? I mean, that to me, that evokes a lot of peace of heart. Like, things are this way and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being content in your sorrow. I mean, that's a contradiction, but it's true.
Right.
If we can live that way.
Yeah. I think that idea of content in your sorrow or, sorry, I say that like a Canadian.
You do. Why yeah. is that?
Because I grew up right on the border of Canada.
Okay. Yeah.
It's that's something good. I have.
Now our listeners know now.
Yeah. It's something I haven't lost yet. I don't think I ever am going to lose that one, actually. I always think it's funny if I say that word in y'all in the same sentence. Y'all are going to be sorry. Like, my kids have probably heard that. But anyway, yeah, the thing that really came up in me as I was, as I focused on those two things is actually it's more the other part of insisting on your own way that kind of brought something in me about the times when I struggle to let go of something,
mm-hmm.
of a circumstance that didn't go how I wanted it to go. And instead of just being at peace with, you know, God was at work in that and everything, just feeling like, I don't want this. I don't want this. Like, I want it to be this way. Why isn't it this way? It should be this way. Like, this is wrong. This is not right. This, I'm not getting what I need. Like, mm-hmm. I'm feeling this deprivation or pain or, you know, and I'm not doing something to deserve that. So why is this persisting? I think we can do that in our own spiritual lives a lot, where we are insisting on our own way or our own interests. Mm. Out of a place of lack of trust that God,
oh my gosh, isn't that part of the definition of original sin, is humans lost their trust?
Yeah, absolutely. God. Because the reality is that when we feel we need to insist on our own interests or our own way as we see it,
mm-hmm.
we're claiming a level of perspective about what is actually good for us that we don't truly possess. I think I know what's best for me better than I do. And some of the things that feel like they're not good may be the best things in the world for me, and I just don't know it. So can I rest in that reality instead of trying to make it happen the way I think it should happen? There's a certain element of grasping in this place of jealousy and envy and insisting on your own interest. You're grasping for things instead of just being open-handed to receive mm-hmm. what God mm-hmm. gives you with gratitude, understanding that nothing's owed to you, but God will give you what you need. You know, famous for, I know the plans I have for you.
Right.
Plans for your good, for you to prosper, for life. And he's not a stingy God. He's yeah. a generous God. He's a God. He's a giver. But so often we want to define the terms about what we want to get. And it's, how ungracious is it to say to the giver, these are the gifts you should give.
Right. Do you know this kind of, it's all coming about to me and kind of in my mind about one of the reasons we even do the show too, not only just about, you know, forging these beautiful friendships together in relationship to grow closer to the Lord, but indeed it is about forming our conscience well. And that's part of one of the reasons we do this. And we all have that duty, you know, to form our conscience well, which is part of what we're doing today too, trying to inform ourselves and share our adventure with our readers through breaking down this particular piece.
Yeah. So as we've been trying to do in the same, in all of these episodes, kind of say like end on some practical ideas about how we could decrease functioning out of a place of jealousy or envy or of self-interest. Because I think in the end, we could just kind of define all of this as functioning out of selfishness and self-interest in whatever relationship mm-hmm. that we're in. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on how you think we could grow in that?
Generosity. Generosity of others, not just, I'm not saying just not financial. I mean, I really with time. I mean, that's one of the things you're so good at is being very generous with your time. Really drew me to you and your interest and your sincere interest. So overcoming selfishness is being generous with others in a time and merciful, being, you know, really a lot more merciful is another way because we've been talking about, you know, kindness too in the previous episode. Yeah. And just those always, you know, and it also comes down to me, and we've talked about this several times on the show, but this is a good time to talk about it again as an examination of conscience. You know, sure. where have we been jealous, envious, self-interested? Where have we been that in our day? And really be sincere in trying to mend those ways.
Mm, yeah. One thing that it's a good practice is to try to stop looking at life as a zero-sum game.
What do you mean by that? Yeah. I never really, what is a zero-sum game? What does that mean?
A zero-sum game means that when somebody else gains something, it means you've lost something.
Oh, okay.
That every plus in one person's column is a negative in your column.
Those are for your very competitive types.
Right, but a lot of people live this way.
Wow.
And so to really start looking at things from the standpoint of just because somebody else is blessed over here doesn't make you any less than that you somehow had something taken away from you because somebody gave something to you. What is the perfect example of that? The parable of the workers in the field that Jesus tells, right? The guys come at the beginning of the day, they get hired for a day's wage. Guys come at the middle of the day, they get hired for a day's wage. Guys come with like an hour left, hired for a day's wage. At the end of the day, they all find out, even though they worked significantly different hours, they all got paid the same thing, right? And they're jealous, envious of the guys that only worked an hour and still got paid the same wage. When what does the Lord say? What is it to you if I decide to be generous?
That's right.
You contracted for a day's wage. You got what you contracted for. What does it matter what went on with the other person?
That's right.
And so, and then another image that comes to my mind as I'm saying this is when after his resurrection, they're on the beach and Peter's talking with Jesus and John is following him. And Peter says, "What about this guy?" You know, about John. Mm. And Jesus says, "What's it to you if I want him to stay until I, you know, return?" I think he says, "What's it to you? You feed my sheep.
Right.
You tend my land." It's this idea of like, stop worrying about everybody else.
Exactly.
And what everybody else has or doesn't have or what you know,
right.
You get this comparison thing.
Right.
Just stop.
Right.
And just be grateful for what you do have. But another, like maybe a little more concrete way, I actually have an example from life.
Good, okay.
Last night, I had a beautiful opportunity to spend time with my daughter. It's actually a whole day pretty much where it was just one-on-one. We were together because we were in exile from the house in Cyprus because there was no AC as we discussed. And so we actually had to spend the night at a hotel and all the meals were getting eaten out. So I, you know, met up with her for lunch and I asked her, "Hey, where you want to go to lunch?" And so she decides she wants to go to the poke place, you know, poke bowl.
Yeah.
Well, the reality of the poke place at this point is I had an experience where I don't think it was the poke itself, but I think my stomach was a little off and I had eaten the poke. And so I had like stomach upset for a whole day where I was just basically it was repeating on me. And so as she says poke, I'm just thinking of that. And I'm like, I don't want poke. Like, even the thought of it right now is kind of making me gross out. But I had made a decision that I really wanted my daughter to get the beautiful experience of choosing whatever she wanted.
Yeah.
Just to really experience me just wanting her to make the decisions that were going to be pleasing to her and a blessing. So we ended up at the poke place and I ate like a third of it and basically had to choke it down.
Oh man.
But the funny thing is that I watched her enjoying her meal, chatting it up, happy as a clam. And then when she was done, you know, poke's kind of light. So I had like 2/3 of mine left. I was like, hey, you know, I think I'm good. Do you want mine? Oh yeah, I would love that. And so I chose not to have my own way in that moment, even though it was kind of uncomfortable,
yeah.
But I got to enjoy her pleasure in having her own way.
Right.
As a gift I was able to give her. And I think I enjoyed that more than I would have enjoyed going to another restaurant that would have been more pleasing to me.
Better to give.
I also got the same experience when we went to dinner at the Cheesecake Factory. And this is the way it works. I can never justify all the calories for a piece of cheesecake, but I will always take the mom tax from the cheesecake that my kids get.
Yeah.
And so I was like, whatever cheesecake you want to get, is good. Well, she picked a cheesecake that was definitely not my preference and I didn't negotiate it. And I just like, okay. I still took the mom tax.
Very good.
So that's just the point, just being like, sometimes makes decisions to not choose what you want. To just say, okay, fine.
That's a beautiful type of mortification during these times, yeah. Especially.
Absolutely. So there's always times to practice that, not choosing your own way and letting other people take the reins.
Yeah.
So
food for thought. I like it. But I'm bump.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were really had gone full on like dad joke on that.
Sorry.
One. That was very punny, Pam. Very punny. Okay. All right. Well, on that note, I think we better close it down because it could go horribly wrong from here.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm sure none of our listeners were envious at all of that kind of joke.
No, not at all. But if you know someone that is just kind and generous and not self-interested, maybe you could share this episode with them.
Absolutely. Or if they are jealous and you just want to send them a message, you can send it to them too.
Oh, goodness.
So we really enjoyed having y'all listen in on our chit-chat today. And
sure.
We hope that you will continue joining us and continue sharing with others. And we also hope that you will return with us next time. So until then, please remain united with us in prayer. God bless.